This is Ozarks at Large. In 2020, Arkansas voters will get to decide whether they want to change the process of getting citizen-led and legislature-referred initiatives on the ballot. The process is what got measures like medical marijuana, casinos, and a higher minimum wage before voters during the last two election cycles. Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek spoke with University of Arkansas political science professor and director of the Arkansas Poll, Janine Perry, about these proposed changes that Perry says fit a national trend of what appears to be a tightening up of ballot initiative processes. Zuzanna asked Janine to first explain how the current amending of the Arkansas Constitution process works.
I think the first thing we should do is distinguish between the different kinds of ballot measures people find in a particular year. So one is that the state legislature can make proposals to us, and they can do up to three a year. And they don't have to do three, but just up to three. And this year, it appears we will indeed see three from the legislature. So those are legislatively referred amendments. That's the way that we phrase it in my field. In addition to that, folks might see citizen-generated, right? Again, this petition process or the signature-gathering process that happens to qualify those proposals for the ballot. And they can come in the form of kind of plain Jane statutory acts, you know, just sort of how a bill becomes a law type things, or they can be constitutional amendments. For an initiated act to qualify, you need 8% of the number of people, so the signatures of 8% of the number of people who voted in the last gubernatorial or governor's election. So I think right now that's 60 or 70,000 valid signatures. And of course, many of the signatures will be invalid because people will be so enthusiastic they'll sign multiple times, or they can't remember when it gets passed down the church pew row, or whatever happens to be the case, or they're not from Arkansas, maybe they're not registered here, so you always have to get at least 20% more because some of the signatures are going to get thrown out if you want to truly qualify. For the constitutional amendment, the threshold, as listeners might imagine, is slightly higher, and that has to be 10%. And right now in Arkansas, that's typically 85,000 to 90,000 valid signatures. So you and your friends can get together and spend some months gathering valid signatures. That's how you do it.
And this legislative session, lawmakers have proposed a constitutional amendment that would make changes to all those requirements you just described. Now, that amendment will still have to go before voters in 2020, but what are the ways in which the process would change?
So it's an interesting confluence of the two traditional methods for changing the Constitution specifically, in the sense that the legislature has decided to reserve one of its spots for a referred amendment to change the Constitution to ask us if we would like to change the process for amending the Constitution. And there are a number of changes that are in the proposal, and I would encourage people to look at it closely and also listen to the rhetoric and who is speaking the words, because this is actually part of a national pattern that is going to make it more difficult to qualify measures for the ballot. That might be a good thing. That might be a bad thing. It depends on people's perspectives in individual years and perhaps in a big picture, right, overall way. But one of the things, I guess some of the main things that have received attention are, for example, right now you have to spread out your signatures across 15 of Arkansas's 75 counties. The new threshold would be that your signatures would have to be spread out across 45 of the state's 75 counties. And, you know, clearly the idea here from the people who adopted Amendment 7, which introduced direct democracy to Arkansas 100 years ago, they didn't just want you to be able to go to a single population center in order to change a statewide experience. But that will now be significantly more true than it was before, if the measure passes, that the legislative referral to change this process, if that passes. One of the other changes is that it would eliminate what's been known as the 30-day cure period, which means if you turn in your petitions in the summer at the usual deadline, which is in early July, and you fall a little short as the Secretary of State's office starts to validate the signatures, as long as you met, or I think it was like 75% sort of looked like you were headed toward the goal, you still get an additional 30 days to kind of remedy the problem. that cure period would be eliminated. And a number of proposals in the several decades that I've been following Arkansas politics have needed the 30-day cure period to kind of scramble to get those final measures, those final signatures in. So that would be eliminated as well. The deadlines would be different. They would be a firmer deadline. Instead of, you know, 4 months in advance of the election, we would have a January 15th deadline and then an April 15th deadline. For most people, that's also really sort of a tightening up of the ability to qualify. And there's actually one other measure in there, a provision that I haven't seen a lot of talk about, but sort of makes sense to me as a potential twist of rhetoric for the campaign that's likely to come. And that's that the legislature increased its own threshold for its legislatively referred amendments from just half of both chambers wanting to send the proposal to the people to, I believe it's 2/3. So my presumption is they thought, well, if we're going to make it harder for the citizens to qualify measures, we should also be able to say that we made it harder for ourselves to qualify measures. Because really, while we have seen an increase in the proportion of measures put on our ballots and that also that we have approved, the approval rating, I guess the batting average has been going up lately. While we've seen that, most of those have actually been legislatively referred amendments, even though we sort of have this vocabulary that amendments are run amok. So in this case, the legislature would be able to say we are also tightening the screws on ourselves.
You mentioned this tightening up of requirements to get initiatives on the ballot in states that have this kind of process is happening across the country. Why is that? Why is that happening?
The process of direct democracy in general has always been controversial in the electorate, among elites, and even among political scientists. As you know, and really it kind of boils down to, are the citizens as good a policymakers or a source of public policy, sound public policy, as our elected lawmakers? And of course, often, like most things, the answer to that is kind of in the eye of the beholder. But we do know that in any given year, because there are some states, even more than the 18, that have constitutional initiative availability, something like 25 or 26 have initiated acts, right? Just statutory laws available to them. So in any given year, we'll have 180 to 200 or more ballot measures spread across the 50 states. And the pass rate overall, I haven't seen these figures as recently as I would like, does seem to have gone up, say, as compared to the 1980s or the 1990s. So both the number of proposals has gone up considerably overall. There are some up years and down years. And then the pass rate appears to have gone up as well. And in the most recent cycles, unlike, say, the late 90s or the early 2000s, when a lot of the highest profile outcomes were more conservative, the highest profile outcomes in recent years have been more liberal. And so in my community of scholars, many people have commented that this is another one of those. There's kind of a backlash by chambers of commerce, farm bureaus in the case of Arkansas, more rural and or traditionally conservative interests showing interest in tightening up or clamping down on proposals that fly in the face of their particular policy preferences. It's not the first time in American state history that we've seen a reaction like that, but that does appear to be what's happening. Some legislatures are altering these measures after the fact, which was considered this last legislative session when it came to the application of the minimum wage that Arkansans just proposed and adopted, for example. And then other legislatures and or are pursuing the path, as is Arkansas now, of just tightening up the conditions for qualifications so that arguably we'll see fewer proposals.
So speaking of the Arkansas Farm Bureau, last week, Senator Matthew Pitch, a Republican from Fort Smith, spoke at that agency's policy meeting where he said that changes to the ballot initiative process were needed because left-leaning groups are using it to pass measures like raising the minimum wage. But is that actually the case? Because that measure in particular passed 68% to 32%, which would indicate many parts of Arkansas actually supported it.
Well, I think it's not much disputed that an increase to the minimum wage should be seen as a policy issue that's preferred by the left, that's preferred by liberals and typically by Democrats. But on the other hand, exactly as you point out, it had not just in 2018, but also in 2014, overwhelming support from the electorate. It was adopted with something like 70% of the vote both times. In addition to that, I've pulled the measure a number of times, and it has the support of Democrats, but it also has the support of a majority of Republicans and a majority of independents. The support drops off, but it's still a majority. So it's one of those issues that it is liberal, but it's also populist in the sense of being widely supported in a state that is, you know, where a lot of people struggle economically. But if that seems to be sort of in the crosshairs of some of the actors that appear to be behind this proposed change to tighten down the qualification measure, actors like the Chamber of Commerce statewide, and also the Farm Bureau, who are pretty accustomed in not just Arkansas politics, but American politics generally, pretty used to having more access and more influence in public policy than the average person, and certainly more than, you know, labor unions or other liberal sorts who were backing those minimum wage amendments. So, you know, to me, this looks like pretty bare-knuckled interest group politics, but I wonder about making this kind of change when it's not always used in that direction. And one of the things I thought was so interesting about the somewhat subtle battle that was going on over this proposal down in Little Rock this year is that Christian evangelicals, the socially conservative groups like the Arkansas Family Council, were sort of, I would guess, somewhat uncomfortably, but holding hands with the more left-leaning proposals like David Couch, who was behind the medical marijuana measure and the minimum wage measure both. So I just think that's all really fascinating. It's the classic case of politics making strange bedfellows, because they both have an interest in trying to qualify without raising a ton of money. Ballot measures coming from the people, coming from their respective constituencies. But they lost this battle, at least so far, and the measure will be on our ballots in fall of 2020.
And as we get closer to that election, the rhetoric on both sides of this issue concerning the proposed changes to the ballot initiative process is going to likely get amped up. So what is your advice to voters as they look at this measure?
I would read it. I have done some research in this area, and a lot of other scholars have done a lot of other stuff. And one thing we know is that people, even when they're looking at the ballot, haven't read it. So the summary is going to be really important, and it might seem sort of like the proverbial legalese, but it would be worth people's attention to read it in advance of the election and really ask themselves, you know, where they trust policy ideas, where they want those to emanate from. And maybe to try to think outside of the last election cycle or even the one before that, and really ask themselves about the balance between Republican democracy with a small r, right, where we elect people to talk with each other and then to hash out a compromise, versus writing something for ourselves and then having a statewide debate among typically very likely voters, and then using what's kind of a blunt instrument, which is the yes or no vote. Again, political scientists have differing perspectives on this. Elites in the policy system have a differing perspective on this, interest groups and whatnot. But I tend to be most comfortable when we're not letting our actions be influenced by a recent single event, but rather, you know, try to pull back and look at the big picture. And it's available online for people to read. And University of Arkansas's Extension Office puts up wonderful material about everything as it's qualifying for the ballot. And then they'll do fact sheets every 2 years where they, you know, have the pros and the cons, and they do as objective analysis as I've ever seen. And all of that will be available to anyone in Arkansas who seeks it.
Thanks so much for stopping by our studios to walk us through all that.
Thanks for paying attention.
Jeanine Perry is a University of Arkansas political science professor and the director of the Arkansas Poll. She talked with Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek. The Arkansas legislature also voted to put two other amendments on the ballot in 2020. One has to do with the continuation of a 0.5% sales tax for transportation. The other would make changes in legislative term limits. Zuzanna and Janine Perry also discussed another topic during their conversation recorded yesterday at the Carver Center for Public Radio. That's how special elections may, or may not, favor the single issues on a special election ballot. And that conversation will be on an edition of Ozarks at Large in May.